Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. The state of the tech trade, that's front and center. That sector hitting a new record high today. Two committee members making big moves in that space as well. We debate the road ahead for one of the quarter's best performing sectors. Joining me for the hour today, Stephanie Link, Jason Snipe, and Jim Labenthal. Good to see everybody here at Post 9. Check the markets. We are green, as Sarah was saying, across the board. NAS on pace for its sixth positive day in seven. I said the tech sector hitting a record high today, apropos to our conversation, because two people to my left have made some new significant moves in this space, and that's where we're going to begin today. Jason, I'm going to start with you. You bought Apple. You bought more Apple.
I did.
This stock has been a dramatic underperformer. Month to date, it's the only one that's negative out of the mega caps.
Right.
It's down 5.5%. Quarter to date, it is the only one of the mega caps that is negative, down 11.5% on the year. Why was now the time?
Yeah, no, I mean, Scott, so for me, I mean, it's a couple of reasons. One, you know, I think this AI story has been affecting the stock in a major way over the last several months. Again, the stock is down, to your point, Scott, down 11% year to date. The China news hasn't been good news. You know, it's down 18%. I think that's also priced into the stock. But when I look ahead and I look forward, services is now $23 billion business. It's up 11% year over year. I think about this Google deal, and I think about the integration. I do think they'll probably make some form of announcement in the summer, which I think will serve for the upgrade cycle going into the fall. So that's why I think when you see opportunities with mega cap stocks moving, trading downward like this, I think this is an opportunity to buy in. So that's why we decided to get an allocation
now. I mean, the most recent move lower seemed to be related to the DOJ.
Right. Yep.
And the idea, as I discussed yesterday, it's maybe not so much in what the outcome is, but the distraction that it causes at what feels like a critical time mm-hmm. for this company, right? You had mm-hmm. the, you know, these quarters of negative revenue growth. Now you're perceived to be, and I use that word and underline it, perceived to be behind in AI relative to what mm-hmm. you're you know, large cap competitors have announced already. And we figure that's coming WWDC in the summer. But how are you thinking about that issue?
I think it's noise. I think this anti-competitive behavior, I think this has been a story that has come up before, right? And guess what? I mean, the fine 10% of global revenues could be significant. I think eventually Apple will figure out a way to comply and will move along ahead of this. So it's not a major concern for me. I think it's more about, for me, other parts of their business, the iPhone, and what they're going to do from an innovation perspective. So I think this is a separate issue. I'm not terribly concerned about it, and I think they'll see it through.
Yeah, Steph? What do you make of this move now? Stock's at 170, we'll call it that.
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago we talked about it's now 5% of my portfolio. Mm-hmm. For all of last year, it was only 1% of my portfolio. So I am using the 14% decline, had used the 14% decline, and I might even buy more to be opportunistic. I do think the DOJ could be a distraction, Scott, but this is going to be years in the making.
Right.
I mean, if you go back to Google, it was like 6 years, right? It's going to be 6 years by the time that they settle with the DOJ. Microsoft, it was 3 years. Even this company, Apple, with eBooks, took 4 years to settle. So it's going to be a fine. There's no question about it. But this company's got $100 billion in free cash flow. So whatever the fine is, it's not going to be material,
sure,
in my opinion.
Sure, but again, we said it's not. The outcome is not necessarily the issue. It's what Bill Gates himself suggested in the wake of this news. It's the distraction that it causes. You paint the timeline as, oh, well, it's way down the road before a resolution.
Sure.
You could paint that as a negative and say, well, you don't want the company to be distracted in a significant way for a few years.
I think this company has a huge bench, and so I think they're going to be able to handle it. I do think that they can multitask, and they've proven that in the past. And so when I look at the April quarter, the numbers have been de-risked. Numbers have come down. Mm-hmm. We all know, as Jason mentioned, we all know how bad China is. Why do you think the CEO is over in China at this point in time, trying to build that relationship back up again? It'll happen. It may take some time, but services certainly is the bright spot. I think in the April quarter, they are going to also announce a new buyback because that $90 billion that they have currently expires or is getting close to it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the number is going to be, but I think it's going to be 90 plus. And then, as you mentioned, Scott, we have WWDC. I like the fact that they're making an acquisition in AI as well. And also, I like the fact that they closed down cars, and now they have $1 billion in CapEx that they can spend on additional AI initiatives. And oh, by the way, they have 2,000 people that were employed for the cars initiative. That all of a sudden, they can migrate those people over to AI. So I kind of feel like the risk-reward here makes so much more sense to me versus last year when all they kept doing was missing numbers and the multiple kept on going up higher. Right. The stock is now trading at 26 times forward. It's not cheap by any means, but relative to its history, 36 times, I think is pretty compelling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, what do you think?
I'm holding off on adding to it. Obviously, Steffi, you've done that. Jason, you've just done that. I get it. I hope you guys are right. We haven't talked about the technicals. And I know as the fundamental guy, it's like, well, what's Labenthal doing talking about technicals? But look at the technicals. The 200-day moving average, folks, is sloping down. That's not good in a rising market. The 50-day moving average crossed below the 200-day moving average, the so-called death cross. These are not, you know, foolproof indicators, but they're pretty good. And the good news for both Steffi and Jason here is you're going to be right if it holds this level. 168, if it goes to 168 or below, that will set up the fourth successive lower low since the all-time high last December. Now, if that happens, I think then I will have been wise to wait. By the way, folks, I own it, right? I'm not hoping for this to go down, but I do want to add to it. I think I'm going to get that shot at around the low 160s. However, if it bounces from here, you guys are absolutely right. So I know it's funny, I'm the technical guy today, but here you are.
Well, look, I mean, we had a technical conversation about this chart looking terrible before the nice rebound that it had, right? People started to write it off. Right. Then it had the rebound. Now you have another move lower, so it remains
to
be seen.
And you made a good point, by the way. That move lower is there was a catalyst for it, right? It was the DOJ action. So it wasn't the technicals all of a sudden rolled over out of the clear blue sky. So that's a very good point.
Well, it's also like leaning on a scale that was already a little shaky. So
yeah, but I'm just going to tell you again, 168, I mean, I'm looking at the chart right now. It doesn't matter how fundamental Steph, Jason, and I are. You hit that 168 level, I think the sellers are going to come.
I think in a year's time frame, that's what I'm giving
myself. I'm with you.
And I know you are.
Yeah.
And I know Jason is too.
100%.
I may not time it perfectly, but I feel pretty good that I was only 1% weighted in this thing. It went all the way down, and now I'm slowly building it higher. And I probably will be adding to it if it falls below and gets to 160, I'll add another percent.
Oh,
it's actually, it's interesting. Last year it was 7% of the S&P 500 weighting. It's now under 6.
Right.
So it's come down a lot. So I think that that's telling, clearly, but I think that's an opportunity.
Talk about another stock that's come down a lot. Leads me back to you, Steph. Well, you know, that remark is indicative of the move in the stock, but also you see opportunity in what's happened with Snowflake.
Yeah.
Because it is of the AI stocks that I'm looking at here in front of me, it's certainly one of the worst performers. It's down 15% month to date, and it's down 20% on the quarter. It's, again, it's like one of those outliers, whereas so many stocks in that universe have gone up, this one has gone in the opposite direction. Now you've bought more.
Yeah, so it's down 32% post the quarter, which was really not a bad quarter at all. In fact, they grew revenues, total revenues 32%. Product revenues grew 33%. Free cash flow grew more than expected by $54 million. Margins expanded 400 basis points in the quarter. And so, of course, they didn't raise guidance. In fact, they were very conservative with guidance, and that's why the stock got hit, especially at this kind of evaluation. I mentioned to you I started very small on purpose because of the valuation, but I still very, very much believe in data and how it is integral in AI, and these guys have size and scale, and I think the new CEO is kind of setting up the stage for being pretty conservative on forward guidance. So while I was not happy that they didn't raise guidance, I do think the bar is set low. Remember last year, they actually lowered guidance twice. So I think this new CEO is kind of like, okay, let's set the bar low and let's try mm-hmm. to overachieve, underpromise, overdeliver, and that's when you get a re-rating in a stock. But I still like the theme overall and the positioning of this company with regards to AI.
All right, let me remind everybody too, we have a big interview and an exclusive coming up tomorrow. Brad Gerstner of Altimeter is going to join us. Of course, he's a Snowflake holder, but it's going to be on all things tech and maybe even more importantly, his Invest America initiative, which he's articulated his goal for what he is trying to do for this country many times on this show. Well, he's made some significant strides, including adding some of this country's best known CEOs to join his council. We're going to reveal that, and he's going to talk a lot about it tomorrow. Of course, the NVIDIA trade, it's one of his biggest positions, Meta, Megacap, everything. Everything that you like to hear Gerstner talk about, he's going to do tomorrow exclusively on this program, and we're excited about that. Speaking of tech, Jason, so we've had a lot of conversation about where this trade is, at least ahead of last week or this week.
Right.
Is it done? Is it resting? What's the deal? Mm-hmm. Well, B of A, their client flow trends suggest that investors aren't willing to give up on this thing yet, right?
Right.
They're buying comm services and tech. They sold stocks in 11 sectors, not these. Comm services continues to have the longest buying streak of any sector. That's 21 weeks. While tech saw its fourth week of inflows after seeing outflows most weeks year to date. So how do we assess this trade as a whole as we just hit two key stocks within it?
Yeah, no, I think for me, it's a bit of a digestion, right? You know, it has underperformed in the last month. I mean, the Qs are only up a little over a percent. You know, but when I think about, even from a Fed perspective, we haven't talked about the Fed at all today, which is a good thing in my view. You know, obviously it was very dovish commentary last week. I mean, the dot plot, they're committed to three cuts, which could be a catalyst for a lot of tech. Put that aside for one second. Cloud and AI are multi-year stories. And it's really nice to see a broadening out in the market. You're seeing energy, what energy is doing, staples, transports, whatever, you name it. Every sector has really started to produce over the last month or so. But I believe that tech is due for a little bit of a break, but this is not something to unload or put aside, because I do think there's continued catalyst there, and it's just a little bit of digestion consolidation right now.
Although, you know, Jimmy, Barclays thinks it could be a little bit more. At least once you finally get, if you do, in fact, get some sort of broader consolidation or, a, you know, corrective phase of any kind, they say that tech could lead it. They say, obviously, what everybody else says, well, fundamentals continue to support it, being tech. Stretched positioning and technicals could see tech leading the first leg of the next sell-off. I mean, that's an easy note to write and an easy position to take given the fact that the stocks are up a lot. So it's like, duh. Mm-hmm. But what do we think about it, though?
Yeah, well, I think the question is, do you act on it? And I would not. You know, look, if you get a correction in the market overall, first off, I don't think it's going to be that deep. I don't even think we'd get a technical correction of 10% pullback on the S&P 500. Why? Because a lot of people have looked at the rally over the last 15 months or so, 17 months, and missed out. And a lot of them have. And they're going to come in. You get a 5, 7% decline, they're going to come into the market. Now, if that happens, sure, maybe the note is right. Maybe tech goes down 10%. I mean, the fundamental, there's a line in there about fundamentals being supportive, and that needs to be stressed. These are not nosebleed territory stocks. Sure, we can look at security stocks and see, you know, multiples in the 60s, fine. But if you're going to look at Google, if you're going to look at even Microsoft in the low 30s, even NVIDIA in the mid 30s, these are not insane valuations. So if tech comes off 10%, I personally don't want to add to my underweight by selling tech right now on the theory that maybe it's going to go down more than 10%. What I would like to do is have some dry powder to add to tech, as we were just talking about Apple, if things go down 10% or even 7 or 5%. We'll talk later about some sales I've made, but I have been raising dry powder. I think you need to be ready for some correction, which probably isn't even going to be a technical correction.
But so you're zeroing in on the biggest of the big tech stocks. I'm not necessarily even, I don't want to stop there.
Okay.
You want to look at some of these returns quarter to date for chips?
Go.
So, I mean, the SMH
Scott, do this. You do the returns. Yeah. I'll do the valuation, because in a lot of these, you're going to say, okay, the valuations are kind of supportive. Go ahead.
Right. So, first of all, the SMH is on pace for its best quarter since 2020. NVIDIA's on pace for its best quarter since the Q4 of 2001. So if I tell you some of these gains, NVIDIA's up 91%. These are all quarter to date. Micron 40, Taiwan Semi 34, ASML 30, Applied Materials 29, and so on and so forth. It goes down, you know, 20 for some of these other names. Broadcom's 21, held on this desk. We better be careful about how we look at the whole tech space. Don't just focus on mega caps.
Right.
Let's look at some of these absolutely crazy charts in the chips.
Your point is well made, and I'm just going to, Micron, that was the only one I had time to pull up. You know, yeah, at this year's
up
earnings.
40, Micron's up 40% in the quarter.
And here's the rub on it. You know, you look at this year's earnings, 177 times. You look at next year's earnings, 16 times. So what's going on here? Micron is a really cyclical chip. And it's 16 times next year's earnings. That's pricing in a recovery from the demise of 2022-2023 when we had all of that, you know, the payback for the double ordering and the inventories of customers. Mm-hmm. But your point, Scott, could be writ even larger. I mean, you can look at some of the software names. You know, Oracle's had a great run. Still trades at around 20 times forward earnings. Google, actually, you know, for all of the lambasting that it's been getting recently, it's had a good return, and yet it's roughly 22 times this year's earnings, 19 times next year's earnings. The point I'm making is not to disagree with you. The returns are stellar. Mm-hmm. But in a lot of these technology names, the valuations are still, I would say, somewhat attractive, and I don't think I want to get more underweight as I already am.
I mean, I've been more focused on non-tech as I'm diversifying the portfolio into some of the sectors that have lagged. We've talked about energy, industrials, financials. Believe it or not, those sectors are actually beating technology as a whole if you look at the XLK. XLK is up 9%, and these other sectors are up 10%. No one's really even talking about that.
Well,
and that's because the earnings,
month to date, to your point, tech is only the sixth best sector.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's been dominated by the things that you're talking about.
Exactly. And that's because tech's already run. We already know a lot of these stories. Not to say that it's over, but I don't think you want to chase these names. I own Broadcom. I own Lam Research. I love them. But I'm not buying them. And in fact, I was trimming some of them. And I would continue to trim if they continue to go higher. I love the stories long term, but I see much better value in these other sectors because earnings were better than expected. And we are seeing a broadening out. And what did Powell say last week? GDP is stronger than expected. All three of us have been saying that for years, by the way. So now the Fed agrees with us.
You've been front running, Powell.
We're front running, Powell. We're happy to do it. And at the same time, inflation's still stubborn, but it's come down. All of this means earnings are better than expected. That's good for stocks, and that's good for the broadening. And that's why I'm not chasing tech, but Apple down 14%, Snowflake down 32%, IBM, if that pulls back, I would add to that CDW. Like, I have a whole bunch of names. I just think that there are other places that are more compelling at this point.
Well, don't go spilling the beans yet on a number of moves you have, which we're doing in the B block, okay?
Okay.
Before you take that and make that next sentence. No. All right, because you bought one, two, three. You bought three and you sold two.
Yeah.
We're doing that in the B block. So
cool.
I don't want to, speaking of front running, I don't want to do that. What about the chips? Are we vulnerable or are we just fine?
You know what? I think we're just fine. You know, listen, I mean, NVIDIA is the main story, obviously. They're up 90% year to date, quarter to date. You know, the numbers are crazy, right? And, you know, we had their conference last week. They're announcing a bunch of partnerships, deals. I mean, it seemed endless to a certain degree. But what I will say, and Jim made this point, I mean, the semis are cyclical stocks, right? So we have to be mindful of that. You know, I don't think we're anywhere close to a boom.
They're not trading that way.
No way. Not at all. Not at all.
And maybe they're not that much.
Maybe AI
has changed that game.
Possibly.
It's definitely changed the name of the game. You've got Broadcom has earnings power of $70 to $75. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We were talking about 50 just 2 months ago.
100%.
Right? And the same thing, Lam Research, their advanced packaging business is up to $1 billion, up threefold in a year's time, all because of NVIDIA's platform. So their earnings power is awfully high, too. I'm just saying, my point is I don't want to chase them here, but I recognize that AI certainly has changed the game to a certain degree. You just want to be a little more price sensitive and valuation sensitive,
100%,
right?
100%.
That's the key question as to, you know, whether this whole AI play and this transformative technology has prolonged a cycle longer than we're used to it running.
Yes.
Sure.
Lot of these, you have to figure that a lot of it's in the stocks, right? You don't just jump the way these stocks have jumped and figure that nothing's in the names. But it could still be prolonged much further. It's just a great unknown. Just don't know. Double ordering, things like that. You don't know.
That's very well put. We really don't know. Double ordering will show up and triple ordering. It will show up. I have no idea when. But to the question you're asking, I intellectually look at two different types of chip stocks, the AI chips and the non-AI. And if you look at the last 2 years, a lot of non-AI chips have really, really languished. I mean, do I have to go into Qualcomm? Sorry, Jason, do I have to? NXP?
We're both in it.
Right. And, you know, 2023 and 22, frankly, these were not good years for those stocks. Now they're recovering, but they're not recovering on the basis of AI. Yes, Qualcomm is probably in its quarter going to come out and say, hey, you know, we're getting AI on the edge in your phones. But that's not what Qualcomm moves on.
Qualcomm's up 16, a cyclical. It's up 16% in the quarter. It's not like it's done absolutely nothing. It just doesn't look as sexy next to a Micron, an NVIDIA, or an AMD, or a LAM, or a Taiwan, or an ASML.
And I think therein lies the story that I'm paying attention to on a day-to-day basis, that a lot of stocks, not just in tech, which have languished, I mean really languished, and I've taken some heat for it appropriately, you know, for hanging on to these things for a long time, have started to really recover. I mean, outside of tech, you can look at financials, industrials. We've done this many times. Look at energy, right? Look at one of the things I get kind of laughed at for holding quite a bit, GM. I almost don't want to mention it because it's a jinx, but man, what a run.
52-week high.
From 27 to 44, and I have to say this, right? When the UAW strike was settled and all the headlines were, look at how the UAW pulled one over on management there. Ha. Ha, don't believe headlines, folks. Do your own research.
I'm actually looking at the cybersecurity names. I'm kind of hoping Fortinet was a dog last year. It's up 15% this year. I'd love to buy that if it pulls back. And it could in a day. We know how volatile cybersecurity is. It's going to be a $1 trillion total addressable market. And that's lowballing it. Every single day we hear about a cyber attack. Even cybersecurity companies are having cyber attacks. When that happens, you know things are just not working. And what we are hearing from CTOs is that you're seeing a consolidation. Companies don't want to have 10, 15 vendors. They want to have five. So you pick the big five. You want to pick a name? Palo Alto, Fortinet, CrowdStrike, whatever. Absolutely. You could also pick HACK, which is the ETF, which I would recommend because it's a little less volatile. But Fortinet is doing a lot of right things, and that's one that's absolutely on my radar should it pull back.
I'm glad you brought up that sector because, you know, if you got chips and software, now these are part of that software, obviously, but cyber, those stocks, charts look straight up, too. We do continue to follow the bridge collapse in Baltimore after a cargo ship hit the structure earlier this morning. Our Eamon Javers is there with the very latest. Eamon, what are we learning this hour?
Well, Scott, we're going to hear from the President of the United States coming up later this hour. We expect to get more information also from the NTSB coming up at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. As you take a look now at this cargo ship, the Dolly, nearly a 1,000-foot-long cargo vessel, now wedged in among the wreckage of the Francis Scott Key Bridge here at the Port of Baltimore. You can see the wreckage of the bridge still on the hull of the ship there, which is piled high, 6-7 cargo containers high on the deck of that ship. Still, we can see the engines do appear to be running on the ship. There is smoke coming from the smokestacks on it. No movement at all since it impacted that bridge at about 1:30 a.m. this morning. We heard from the Maryland governor, Wes Moore, earlier today. He described the moments at which the ship issued a mayday call, which gave enough notice for some action to be taken here at the port. Take a listen.
I'm thankful for the folks who once the, you know, once the warning came up and once notification came up that there was a mayday, who literally by being able to stop cars from coming over the bridge, these people are heroes. They saved lives last night.
So, Scott, clearly the human toll here could have been a lot worse. As it stands right now, there are six people still unaccounted for. Two were rescued, one rescued and sent to the hospital. One person was able to get out of the water on their own, and officials say they have spoken to that person and verified his condition. So there are now six unaccounted for. This is still officially 11 hours in now, a search and rescue mission. They say they have divers on the scene as well as people on the surface and helicopters circling above us. I asked the governor at that press conference, Scott, if there's any indication now of when they might be able to remove that wreckage and reopen the Port of Baltimore. That wreckage right now is across the entire span of the river here that gives access to that port. He said it's simply too early to even begin to give any estimate of that. all of the shipping coming into the Port of Baltimore, including all of the cars that come in to the East Coast of the United States, or the bulk of them, all of that is now being shut down, and it's not at all clear from the governor on down, from any of the officials here, when they'll be able to reopen this port. So a major economic impact here, Scott, and no deadline for the recovery. Back over to you.
All right, Eamon, I appreciate that update live from Baltimore. That's our Eamon Javers on scene. Thank you for that. Up next, more committee moves. I told you Stephanie has a bunch, so we're going to go through those a little later on in the program. Farmer Jim's got a few of his own. Halftime's back in 2 minutes.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier, because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, we're back. Time to go to the Linkster for these moves that I told you about earlier. Okay, so you bought 3M or you bought more 3M?
3M.
You bought 3M.
I bought 3M.
Okay. Okay. Tell me why.
I think this is GE 2.0. I think that this is a conglomerate and they are spinning off pieces. They are going to spin off their healthcare piece. We know that. But I think there's a lot more that they can do. But what really got me jazzed up was Bill Brown. He was L3 Harris's CEO from 2012 to 2022. The stock was up over 400%. He gets things done. He may not be Larry Culp, but he's pretty close. I think the valuation at 10 times forward estimates is extremely cheap. They're paying down debt. They do have litigation. They do have lawsuits. It's not clean, but this is exactly what GE was many, many years ago. It wasn't clean and very hard to buy, but I think if you have patience, that I think that you will be well rewarded.
Okay, now you have had to wait a good while for GE.
Yes.
Right? At the expense of like catching a lot of flack about, oh my gosh, this thing's not doing anything. When's it going to turn around? You can't turn around a freighter that quickly. You were willing to do that and you're being rewarded now. How long do you think you're going to have to wait, if at all, for the kind of turnaround that you expect for what you've already determined to be a GE 2.0?
I think that their businesses are healthier than what GE's businesses were at the lows, at the low point. Remember, this is a conglomerate. They have a lot of pieces. They have industrial, transportation, electronics, consumer. I mean, a lot of these businesses are good. And by the way, like 70% of their revenues are overseas, around the world. So to the extent you think that the global economies are kind of thawing, getting a little bit better, which I do, then I think these guys should do well. By the way, the 10 multiple compares to 20 times over his history. It used to command a premium multiple because of the premium businesses. It's lost its way, and I think that Bill Brown is going to be able to fix it. So I actually think it won't take as long, Scott. That being said, it's a 200 basis point position for me versus what we talked about Apple, a 500 basis point.
Sure.
Right?
One you could add to.
Sure.
But
you hope, I mean, you're basically hoping that Mr. Brown pulls a Culp-like turnaround.
He absolutely will.
So you're betting on the person as much as you are the fundamentals, if not maybe even more so on Brown.
Yeah, I have to kind of do that, right? I mean, certain CEOs, that's what makes the story so fascinating because of the prior track record. These aren't businesses that are hard to fix. Distribution, efficiencies, productivity, the margin improvement, they're not hard to fix. I think GE was much harder to fix. I mean, renewables and power was a struggle. Healthcare was amazing, but underneath the big umbrella, was very poorly run. And then aviation had potential, but again, it wasn't great execution. They had a lot to do. Culp had a lot to do. Mm-hmm. He fixed it. I think Brown doesn't have as hard of a lift. So again, it started off small, and I'll probably add on any pullbacks.
Jimmy, what were you going to say?
Well, what I'm wondering here, obviously, everybody wonders about the litigation.
Yeah.
You addressed it. You said it's priced in. High dividend yield, Here's what the question is. Buying back shares, can they buy back shares without the litigants in their various cases saying, hey, look, they got more money and, you know, that's
they're probably not going to right away.
They got to get that settled, right?
But the stock is at this valuation. It's cheap enough that I think that that's not expected at this point. Buybacks. And by the way, I also wouldn't be surprised if they come in and cut the dividend. I wouldn't.
Well, that would be kind of scary, right? Yeah. I mean, that's usually a sell that moment.
They're settling all this litigation. The free cash flow is a little bit better than expected. They're paying down debt. So I don't know if they are going to cut the dividend, but I wouldn't be scared to say that all of a sudden things are in shambles. They're just not,
So the other one, Freeport, that's a new buy?
That is a new buy. I've been in and out of it, but I do think, as I mentioned, if I think that the global economies are sort of poised to rebound, this is very tied to copper prices. For every 10 cents of share in copper price change, it's $430 million to EBITDA and $340 million to cash flow. And oh, by the way, their debt has gone from $6 billion to $400 million. And so they've been paying down debt. They've done a great job there, and I think the valuation is pretty attractive. This is definitely a bet on the global economy's rebounding. The stock is not going to do anything if that doesn't happen, but I do think it is going to happen.
Okay, you bought D.R. Horton, DHI.
I did. I bought D.R. Horton. I've been talking about housing. Housing is my favorite sector. Mm-hmm. I just think that seasonally, this is exactly the time when you want to own the home builders.
Yep.
We saw KB Homes this morning where orders were up 55% sequentially in the quarter. Mm-hmm. Gross margins were better. And the company, KBH, was talking about incentives coming down a little bit more because demand is a little bit higher than expected. That plays right into D.R. Horton. They have a play on the Southeast. That's 51% of their total revenues. That's where you're seeing growth in homes. And also the people, their first-time buyers exposed as well. And that's exactly where I want to be. 11 times earnings versus 13 times historical. It had a nice run last year. I'm right-sizing it to start. On pullbacks, I would definitely add to it. But I already own Home Depot in a very big way. So I'm placing a bigger bet on housing.
If you're placing a bigger bet on housing, why are you selling Sherwin-Williams, SHW?
Just because I made 20% off the lows, and I think that, and it's also more expensive. It's not that I don't like it. I just didn't have any cash. And so D.R. Horton, to me, is more compelling at this valuation, and it's really more of a pure play in terms of housing, so there's a little more beta, a little more juice to the story.
Okay, what about Bristol-Myers, which you sold as well, BMY?
Yeah, I eked out a 6% gain in that stock, and I'm calling it a day. I know, Jimmy, you've been there, but I'm like, great, we made some money. I like this story very much. I do think it's very cheap. I also think the dividend is very safe. The balance sheet's great. But this is a company that's rebuilding its pipeline. It's going to take, talk about years, this is going to take years to actually unfold. And so taking my money and putting it elsewhere.
All right, let's get the headlines now with Bertha Coombs. Hi, Bertha.
Hi, Scott. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin met with Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant this morning and said that it was a, quote, moral imperative to protect Palestinian civilians. The meeting comes at a tense time between the two nations after an Israeli delegation pulled out of a planned meeting in protest of the United Nations resolution for an immediate ceasefire. The Labor Department found immigrant children as young as 14 years old were working illegally around heavy equipment at a Tennessee company. The company, Tough Torque, makes lawnmower parts for brands such as John Deere. The company was fined for hiring 10 children and must set aside $1.5 million to help them. Its majority owner said that the children were temporary workers who were not hired directly by the company. And after a weekend of outages, Panera Bread's website and app are slowly coming back online, though not fully operational. Silicon Valley Daily first reported systems for the restaurant chain went out on Saturday morning. Panera has yet to make a statement on just what caused that outage. Apparently, even the displays in the stores, Scott, were down.
All right, Bertha, appreciate that. Bertha Coombs, thank you. Up next are calls of the day. The committee debating the strategy on Netflix, plus a bullish note on the big banks as well. We'll be back after this quick break.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance.
Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
Welcome back. Julia Boorstin joins us now with a news alert. Julia?
A news alert on the NFL. Peacock will exclusively stream the NFL Friday night opening weekend game on September 6th, and it will be from Sao Paulo, Brazil. This will be the third game streamed on Peacock, and it follows the big numbers that Peacock got for its wild card game at the end of the last season. And this will be the Peacock will be the exclusive national home of the NFL's first ever regular season game in Brazil. So a lot of firsts here. Scott, back over to you.
All right, Julia, appreciate that update. Julia Boorstin. All right, calls of the day. Let's hit Netflix first, Jason, which you own. It was removed today from Bank of America's Best Ideas list. They do reiterate buy. So you always got to be careful when you talk about these, you know, top lists.
Right.
They're not taking down their rating on the stock, and that's perhaps most important. Shares are up 91%, though, in the last year. How do you view the stock in the here and now?
Yeah, listen, I'm likely not adding here. It's trading at 36 times forward. It's up 28% year to date, but they've won password share. That I think is working well for them. The ad supported tier is also working. Live sports, their foray within the partnership with the WWE. I like all the deals that they're working on. The concern for me is content, right? So content, obviously, through the strike through last year, is challenging for all the players, but I do think Netflix is ahead because of the licensed content that they already have in the library that they've already built. So I wouldn't add here, but I continue to like it.
Let's talk banks, because Morgan Stanley's Katie Huberty says of the U.S. large cap banks, we're bullish on the ongoing capital markets rebound. We see money center banks as a way to play that dynamic. Our team believes that the money center banks, Bank of America, Citi, Goldman, and J.P. Morgan, all of which they have overweight, are a way to play this view. Now, we do have ownership, Steph. You go Bank of America and Morgan Stanley, your two largest positions.
Yeah.
So you must agree with Ms. Huberty. Morgan
yeah,
Stanley.
I do. I mean, we've been talking about capital markets recovering. We've talked about M&A, equity, capital markets, debt capital markets, investment banking, the whole thing. We are seeing a recovery. There's no question about it. When it will be appreciated, I don't know. But Bank of America trades at 1.1 times book, 2.6% dividend yield, which I believe will go higher, very well capitalized, and their expense management is phenomenal. On Morgan Stanley, it's more of a mix, right? They have capital markets, and then they have wealth management. And that wealth management is 50% of their business. So maybe not as levered as Goldman Sachs per se if you're playing capital markets, but I do think you're starting to see a recovery in the wealth management space. In fact, Schwab, which I recently have added to, their NNA in the month of February actually rose 4.7%, which is really one of the highlights in terms of getting new assets. And I think that bodes well for all of the banks in general. That has been a real sticking point, not only for Schwab, but for the group. So I like those three names. Those are the ones I have been adding to on weakness.
Jason, the return of capital markets is a big deal for your Goldman Sachs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why we own it, because I do believe capital markets, deal volumes, all will pick up in the second half. The stock's only up 5% year to date, but it's encouraging to see even the Reddit IPO, like how well it did, and starting to see other names come to market. So that's the play for me as it relates to the financial space. And also, I would say, I think it's important that we are seeing less interest rate volatility. I think that'll play well for the money centers and deal volume and loan volumes to pick up.
So Jimmy, you were on yesterday, we talked about Citi, right? Which I think it was Mayo at Wells was, you know, extraordinarily bullish about, which he has been for a while. So I don't want you to give me that today, but JP Morgan is the other one you own. But what about this call? Now's the time for large cap banks, both ones that sort of excel in capital markets, but also money center banks that'll do well in a good economic and maybe lower rate environment?
I think it gets a little tricky here, and that may surprise people to hear me say that. But you know, you got to look at the short term here. Over 6 months, the XLF is up 25%. That's the diversified XLF. I mean, that even includes Berkshire. So there's been one heck of a run in banks, and XLF is mostly money center banks. Mm-hmm. So JP Morgan's had a heck of a run. Goldman has had a heck of a run. Citi has. And it gets hard to put new money to work here. Now, all that said, I think these stocks have a lot more room to run because of what Steph and Jason just said. All I'm saying is at some point, much like the market, okay, or much like the semis that we were talking about earlier, at some point, there's got to be a little pause, a little bit of a give back. I will put new money today to work in Citigroup and JP Morgan, but not a lot. I've got to respect the rally that's come. Long term, I love these. I love these long term. Short term, it's a little tricky.
A lot of the companies early in March, Scott, actually reiterated guidance. So I don't think the numbers are really at risk. It's really where do you see the acceleration? Where do you see the momentum in capital markets, right?
To flip my own comments on me that I said to Scott, you know, the valuations are really quite attractive.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really quite attractive, kind of 10 times earnings, good, decent yields. You know, Citigroup at 70% of tangible book value. So you got to look at both parts, what they've done and what the valuations represent.
All right, quick break. We'll come back. We'll document some of Jim's new moves, and Mike Santoli is going to join us with his midday word. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, here at Post 9. So I get we're up across the board. It still feels like we're really not going to be willing to place any sort of bet until we see PCE. Especially
yes.
Given what happened with the most recent CPI and PPI.
I would say until you see PCE, till you get through the end of the quarter, and maybe you're going to even have to start to get into sort of pre-announcements and jobs report. Right now, the market sort of reveals it's sort of bias or it's, you know, path of least resistance, which is drift with a slight upward bias. It's a 50-50 day again below the surface. It makes sense. To me, it all starts with super calm bond market because of a lack of huge disagreement on the macro. And then the rest of it is just sort of short term stuff, tactical. People are fully invested, but this is not the way a market typically peaks ultimately. And so people feel right now that they're willing to ride out the next pullback. And that's how the market acts.
Sorry to interrupt you. The economic data today wasn't great.
No, it's not great.
Consumer was weak. And what was it? Another manufacturing
Philly Fed.
Yeah. Not great.
It's getting choppy. And inside of the consumer confidence number, the one that said like their own people's own household finances present condition eroded a little bit. So you don't, you know, extrapolate too much from those things. But I think we have to be on alert for any deviation from the ideal economic path, which I think is now being embraced.
All right. Good stuff. I'll see you on closing bell. That's Mike Santoli, our senior markets commentator. Coming up next, we have more committee moves. The two stocks Jim Lehmenthal is selling. He'll tell you what they are next. All right, we're back with those committee moves from Jim Lehmenthal that I said we had today. So let's start. That was the second one. You sold New York Community Bank, which I was surprised that you got into in the first place. So you can give us the reasoning here.
Yeah, first the trajectory. So it was about a week and a half ago. I decided to take a flyer on it. It shot up to 4. I felt like a hero pounding my chest. The very next day, there was an analyst downgrade. Comes down, and it comes right down over the last few days to the price that I bought it and just said, nope. I'm not going into a loss position with this. I'm over here in the corner playing with matches. Nobody's stopping me. I'll stop myself before I get burnt.
Sure. I mean, I remember the day that you did it, and I think the stock was at like 370, 360, something like that. And I think one of the reasons why you got into it in the first place, you're like, well, you know, former Treasury Secretary Mnuchin has sort of come to the rescue. He's like the white knight here. Mm-hmm. I trust him and the team that he's put together moving forward. I felt like your reasoning was more along those lines, almost, I don't want to say, and I don't want to be disparaging to you in any way by suggesting that you were more enamored with that and ignored the fundamentals of the business, which even with the rescue remained challenging. Let's be clear. That's why the stock is sitting where it is.
I don't take that as disparaging at all. That's accurate. I do very strongly still think that the Steve Mnuchin put, I'm just making that up.
No, but that's what you said at the time.
Yeah, no, but I'm not backing away from it. What I'm saying is this stock can go lower before it realizes whatever Mnuchin's exit price is going to be. And I don't want to be sitting at this at $2.60 when I bought it at $3.40. I just don't need that. I've got a lot of things working right now. I don't need to be worrying about New York Community Bank and when its full value will be realized. I have no interest in it. I lost interest in it.
Okay. And you sold Greenbrier, which, to my recollection, you've been in for a reasonably long period of time. I remember you talking about it for a long time.
In and out, Scott. I get in and out of this. And if you look at a long-term chart, I mean, the stock kind of cycles between 25 and 50. I am, you know, trying to raise a little bit of cash here because who knows? You look, if Apple goes down, if Steffi and Jason maybe bought too early, sorry to say it that way, and I get a bite at the Apple, I want to have some dry powder or maybe to add to some of the things like AMAT or Amazon that I recently bought in small size. I have to have some dry powder. I hate that thing where the market goes down and then you're selling this and buying something else. That doesn't feel good. So wanted to raise some cash. If the market goes down, Greenbrier is likely to go down with it. It's a beautiful little industrial bending metal into rail cars. I do love it. Likely to be back into it if it goes below 40. So stay tuned. I do cycle in and out of this. It's my main sort of cyclical play there.
All right, let's do final trades after this quick break. Oh, we have some news just crossing that we want to alert you about. Take a look at shares of Boeing on an intraday. Taking a little bit of a move here, down about 1%. News that Moody's has now placed the credit ratings of this company on review for possible downgrade. And that is on Moody's belief. They say that Boeing will be unable to deliver 737 narrowbody aircraft at the volumes required for it to materially expand its free cash flow. So that's a story we're going to watch for the rest of the afternoon. Another reminder, Brad Gerstner, exclusive with us tomorrow on the Halftime Report. We're excited about that. I hope you'll join me on Closing Bell. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, Liz Young, Courtney Garcia, Jason Hunter will be joining me then. So I'll see all of you in a couple hours. Let's do final trades. Farmer Jim, why don't you start us off?
CVS, coming back strong. You know, there was some news today about Amazon delivering prescriptions, and the stock was down over 1%, and it stormed back. It's in the green. Chart looks good, by the way.
Okay. Jay Snipe.
Costco EPS growth was up 19% in the last quarter. It's been a little bit volatile over the last couple of weeks. I like this one.
All right. And the Linkster.
Target, I think they have $10 a share of earnings power.
All right. Good stuff. I'll see all of you on Closing Bell. The exchange begins now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.